Okay, okay. And
that means we can start. I'm sorry, Madam Chair.
Say that again.
And we have Senate File 1094, Education Boards. Roger, Senator Chamberlain.
Madam Chair, thank you for reconvening. Before we get started, perhaps we can take care of an author's amendment, A1.
Do we have the A1 amendment? Here it comes. Well, there is handing it out. I just would say that this bill was introduced last year, and I was the chief author, but I moved over and let Senator Chamberlain take that on. And you know, it was myself and Senator Pogamiller and Senator Scheid were the three authors of it as it was introduced.
What do we do about Pogamiller?
And Senator Bonhoeff has joined when Senator Chamberlain took over as the author, she saw fit to join the.
But can we still blame Pogamiller for part of this? Or?
You can do whatever you wish.
Thank you.
But we did not hear this last year. We had a few more things on our plate with budget, but this is another bill that relates to an option that can be available to school districts in terms of governance. So, Senator Chamberlain.
I will perhaps I'll briefly explain that amendment, Madam Chair.
So, Senator Chamberlain moves Senate File 1094 and has an author's amendment, the A1 amendment.
To the amendment, Madam Chair. It goes to page 5, line 5 point, after line 6, at the end of that sentence on line 6, that particular paragraph B talks about after they approve, decide to convert to an education board, the education board would enter into a memorandum of understanding with the local bargaining unit, and they would lay out the all the details of how they'd operate and function in that particular site-governed school or ALC. So what this does is, because the board can be converted in a couple different ways, this just says that the agreement does not have to be approved by that bargaining unit. So they have the agreement, they have a memorandum of understanding with the bargaining unit, and because they have that and everything's worked out, their sign-off and official approval is not needed. It's kind of implied in here, but we wanted to make sure that that didn't stand in the way of either the voters or the teachers' desire to do this. So that's that. I'll briefly, as the chair has mentioned, this began last year with Senator Olson, and I'm now, of course, new author. And as we know, Senator Pogamiller and late Senator Scheid were on this bill as well. It's a good idea whose time has come, and I'm happy to have the opportunity to present it. It's a good the first bill that Senator Olson presented is a good segue to what we're going to talk about right now. We talk about the constraints and ideas and innovation and creativity and control and empowerment. That's what this bill does, and things that we talk about in this committee wouldn't have to come up here. The schools would have that power and the authority to develop these ideas and plans and be creative. And as a note, I don't know how many of you know what this is, but this is 607 pages. It's in Senator Olson's office. I just made a copy of the top. And took 607 pages of white paper. I show this to a lot of people. This is the No Child Left Behind waiver application, which we have received. That's 607 pages that our school district, that our MDE had to go through to get a waiver from the feds. And that's a heavy burden. There's another at least 657 pages of code and statute that governs our schools. So this gets away from some of the traditional models and ideas. It, you know, frees up the schools and empowers the professionals. 20 years ago, you might recall that the Minnesota, roughly 20 years ago, started the charter schools, led the way in that sense. Open enrollment, and this is a new idea as well, can lead, be the first in the nation. No other school district in the country has this sort of plan. And this plan is not the mandate. It's going to be out there for schools and innovative leaders to pick up. The idea is that choice can lead to empowerment, innovation, and success in all these schools. That's what always we're looking for, is serving the students and finding new ways to do it. And the professionals and the teachers come up to us all the time with these ideas. So quickly, this quick overview, and I'll shoot through the bill real quick. This bill creates optimal conditions for and opportunities for students and schools to succeed, not just schools, but students and schools. It's an organizational idea for schools, but it's ultimately for the student's success. This will empower professionals to use respond to opportunities and student needs more effectively. And this is an important piece. It'll combine authority with accountability. The parents have choice now, open enrollment, charters, other things. And the teachers are always held accountable. Well, now we're marrying up the choice and the accountability and the authority all in one. If they're going to be accountable, we'll empower them to set up their schools the way they see fit to serve the needs of their students to achieve the accountability results that everybody's looking for. So it combines authority and accountability and matches up with a missing part with choice. Choice is there. Now we'll structure it so they can function with choice. And it also helps the districts to respond to incentives created by the choices. As I said before, parents have choices, but the districts really aren't set up to deal with those choices in that competition very well. Quickly through the bill, the first part of the bill, definitions. Talks about what a school, an education board is. Subdivision 2 talks about conversion. There's two conversion methods. School board can choose to do it, or a petition from the local voters in the district. Next part is purpose. What is the overall purpose of the board? Separates controlling and running the schools and management of the schools. They'll still be controlling the physical, the facilities, the buildings, and working with the parents and teachers to come up with curriculum and some administrative duties. But overall, their purpose will be to manage the accountability and outcomes of these schools. Duties. It's just a step beyond the school, beyond the purposes. Facilities, as I've already mentioned, they will be in charge. The school board, the education board, will be in charge of facilities. That doesn't change. All the statutes listed in Subdivision 6 relate to that, to those processes. That doesn't change. And one of the most important parts, I'd say, probably the hub of this is the limitation of the powers in Subdivision 7. So once these are set up, they'll have powers. These site-governed schools will have the authority, similar to charter schools. They will be they'll be exempt from a lot of those issues and problems, same as the charter schools will be. And the education board, as it says in Sub 7, will not be able to dictate to the schools how they run their schools. The principal and the teachers and the parents will be in charge of those schools to run those schools how they see fit. And the education board will be outside of that. They're there to monitor and hold them accountable for what they do. Area learning centers, talks about what they are. They're similar to site-governed schools. They will probably be fully unionized all the time. More specialized learning. Revenue to schools. This is an important piece of this idea as well. You take the same revenue pie, and you got the administrative costs. So you shrink the administrative costs down, and that money gets allocated out to the schools. And the money follows the students. 5% no more than 5% of the money coming into the district or can be retained by the school board. So 95% is allocated out to the schools, and the schools use that money as they see fit. And we don't get bound up with them coming up here asking, for permission to change the use of a car to a bus or something else. I'd share that story we got last year. Senator Stump had a bill on an operating levy, and we had difficulty, and Anne Marie had to look up the definition of a bus. So we can avoid those sorts of issues.
Mr. Lease.
And I already mentioned exemption from certain statutes. they'd follow the charter school process. So this, the hub of this is simply enabling schools to be successful. And they're successful because we're empowering the professionals in the school. I have full faith and trust that these professionals are there, the teachers and the principals, to do the best they can with their students. We see it every day when we go to schools and talk to our to the teachers when they come up here as well. This is so we give them that authority and power to do just what they want. Right now we hold them accountable. This is a new model that has flexibility and puts the control in their hands, so if they're going to be accountable, they can control how the mechanism works to get that to get those outcomes.
Thank you. The two superintendents that were here this afternoon were not able to come back, but both of them, I think, were prepared to testify that they believe that this was an option, a choice. It's not dictating anything, and, you know, we've got other structures like this in our current statutes. Some of them have been taken advantage of, and others have not. And this would be one of those that could be an option for a school district or even a combination of ones, similar to what Senator DeKreif was talking about, that might find some advantage to coming together and becoming an education board that would govern their schools. But it focuses around a bit the same that we had in our conversation with the last bill, the kind of the alternatives now, the site-governed schools and the area learning centers and the contract schools that need some flexibility in how they function, and it kind of puts them under that same kind of umbrella of some independence and the resources following them and being able to continue to work on some innovations and be free to do that.
Well said, Madam Chair. With that, there is one fine young lady did stay around to testify, Louise Sundin?
Sundin, yes. I was hoping she was preparing to testify.
Madam Chair.
Senator Tomasoni.
Before she starts, I want to thank Senator Stump for coming in the room because I was really feeling outnumbered here.
But I always greet you well.
Yes, you do.
And you're so shy and retiring, it would be really, it's hard to cope, isn't it?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate Senator Stump being here, too. My name is Louise Sundin, and I am President Emeritus of the Minneapolis Federation of Teachers. And you all know emeritus is another name for has-been, but I've been in this work a long time, and I want to just give you a little bit of our perspective from across the river. My organization has a long history of pushing the envelope, and for the last probably 27 years since 1985, when then President Albert Shanker gave his famous press club speech outlining all the pieces of a true profession for us, we've been working to create the components of a true profession, and I've talked my chops off trying to convince school boards that they should respect and support the professionals in their classrooms. I've tried to create the environments and support systems to help teachers to be view themselves as a part of a true profession. It's difficult when they are in a large bureaucracy where everybody else has a better idea of what they should be doing and check on their doing it at 15-minute intervals. Usually they're ideas that come from Council of the Great City Schools or somebody from as far away as possible who has the cure for the day. That's basically an organization that was designed it's part of the Taylor Law, and we're trying very hard to get away from that. So every good idea through the years that we ever had, every new school of the future, every innovation school, every in-district charter was crushed or starved or sucked back into the bureaucracy within 6 years of its birth. And we have the hierarchy that we call districts has been what they have succumbed to. So we keep going back upstream, further upstream, to try to figure out how to prevent that reality and how to create a new reality in which, indeed, the professionals are have the authority and the accountability to do the work. So I'm really excited that this particular piece of legislation is called Professional Empowerment Act. That's exactly what we're about. That's what the Richard Ingersoll research says we should be about. And this voluntary elected change in the kind of district management, we believe, just might do the trick and be open to ownership by the motivated professionals. And they would also, at the same time, accept full responsibility for results. Just one other piece of information in support of this this act. A few years ago, I was a part of a small national group of national union goons and professional reformers. And by professional reformers, it was back when Chubb and Moe and all those guys were writing all the original reform stuff. So the education sector decided they were going to get us all in a room and try to help us get along, which was really hard the first few meetings. We only had one walkout. And then we were going to try to come to agreement on a few things that we could form consensus around. And over the period, about 5 or 6 years, we kept meeting, and we did come up with two ideas that we did develop consensus around. The first one was peer review, and we're still working on the empowerment of peer review. We feel it's a very most powerful evaluation and review process there is, used by every other profession. And the second one is something that we ended up calling reciprocal obligation agreements. Now, reciprocal obligation agreements are exactly the kind of agreement that I think are envisioned and referred to in this piece of legislation, where the folks in the self-governed schools or the teacher-led schools or the other kinds of schools are the ones who actually develop the agreement with the education district, and then they are given the freedom and the authority and the responsibility to carry it out. So there's only one other place in the entire country that's ever tried reciprocal obligation agreements. It was for a very short period of time in Providence, Rhode Island, until that place kind of blew up and it disappeared. So I am pleased to be a part of something that would indeed be revolutionary as far as being a state effort. And the Professional Empowerment Act provides the framework for the reciprocal obligation agreements and for the empowerment and the authority for educators to be true professionals. Thank you.
Thank you. Very, very well said. Powerful. Thank you very much. Are there questions of Ms. Sundin or of Senator Chamberlain? Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It is interesting how education, there's probably other areas too, but education seems like there's always a new idea that comes along. And this afternoon in the Education Committee, we were listening to an idea that has some similarities to this one. But I think do you have an idea how this would actually operate or function in terms of, you know, I think I could see it probably in terms of maybe a pilot project or pilot projects around the state, but how would you see this actually getting implemented?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Stumpf. I won't presume to speak for my friend who's the superintendent from Staples who had to drive back home, but I do think that it probably would not be start with a district with 100 schools in it. It would be areas in which we could have maybe a small groupings of empowered schools. It isn't something that thousands of educators are going to leap on immediately. I think we'll have many more educators who will view, like the young woman from Avalon, and will see that, what that kind of empowerment and responsibility would mean to their professionalism. But I certainly think that it would not immediately do in any large school district immediately. However, I do think often of the new big building that's being built on Broadway in Minneapolis, yeah, that is going to be built to house 500 support people to support 3,000 educators.
Madam Chair, I do have to apologize. I did miss probably the important testimony that was on this bill. So,
Senator Stump, you didn't get to hear what her.
Yes, I did.
This is the important testimony.
Well, I mean,
that's all the testimony we've had.
Oh, I thought the superintendents.
They weren't able to come back. So we didn't hear their testimony, but essentially, from both of them, when I talked to them, they were supportive of this. It's not a mandate; it's a choice. And I think as districts, and I think the timing of this may get more districts and boards to look seriously at how this might be a help to them, both from the challenges for the improvement of student learning and the achievement gap and those things, but also the fiscal aspect of it. Because I think, you know, when you just made that comment now of 500 people housed in a building with overseeing 3,000 teachers, does that kind of raise some questions? We can't afford that kind of thing, and I don't know that we're going to end up having an economy that's going to mushroom to keep flooding with money. And so I think people are looking for some efficiencies, but ones that I think will truly strengthen our public education system. And I think Ms. Sundin is on that, because the respect the teachers as professionals and give them an opportunity to function in that role. And that's where I think this goes. And but it's going to take some people like Louise and others that are out there trying to help sell that kind of notion and get people wanting to do it, because it isn't going to be imposed on them. It's an option that's there. And hopefully we'll get that dialogue going between the school boards and the teachers groups and see where, you know, we've led into that now with the single purpose authorizer for in the site governed, dealing with the site governed schools. There's some, it's starting to get at least a toehold, and I think this is an important step to have in place for it. And so I hope that we can put it in place. Because it isn't going to, it's using existing resources. It's a decision that people need to make if they want to redirect the way they govern and oversee those schools.
Madam Chair and Ms. Sugman, I apologize. Your testimony was important.
Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And as you know, we were in another meeting, so I'm sorry I was late and just heard the tail end of your testimony. But thank you for being here and for your partnership. And I did talk to Superintendent Dressen before he left, and he's very excited about this thing. And as I understand it, the way it's been explained to me is people really do believe there would only be about two or three districts that would choose to pilot it in the beginning. I don't know if that's true, but is that kind of your thought?
Who knows? It's not going to be open the floodgates.
Right, exactly. And then just one other thing. Superintendent Dressen mentioned in relationship to the previous bill, because he was also very supportive of that bill as well, that there was just some concern around, and we didn't get to have that testimony. He would have said it when he was here, so if you don't mind. But we had given site-governed schools certain authorities, and so perhaps they wanted to expand the district's ability to do it in as well. And so you might ask him more about that.
Well,
as a choice.
I would hope that we would, this bill would move on to, we've got, even the bill that I'm carrying with for the career tech and the post-secondary enrollment options covers some of the, there's overlap there.
Yes.
And at some place we will sort out and see how we can get this, get the bases covered and having credible for this, because I think it meets the governor's criteria. He wants bipartisan support, and these are some reforms that are options that I think I don't see why he wouldn't support.
Yeah.
So if we want to put it together or have the individual one that encompass what we want to do and have it go to him and celebrate his signature.
Very good. Thanks, Senator Olson.
Thank you very much, Ms. Unden. Senator Tomasoni.
Is there a fiscal note to this, Madam Chair?
No, there shouldn't be, because it doesn't.
Madam Chair, there's no cost. There's no mandate here to do anything. It would just be up to the school districts to decide.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Noman.
On the 27th of April of last year, we got a fiscal note back, and it was at zero.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Any elections involved here?
Well, if it could be an election if it was a petition from the citizens to do it, but otherwise the board can do it. So you don't know that until it happens.
It's kind of a strong. I'm sure. Are we having an omnibus bill this year, or are these things all going by themselves?
Well, we've been trying to avoid omnibus. You get run over by the bus with those. there may be, who knows what's going to happen before the end of the session. So, is there?
Is anybody testifying against this bill, or is
Senator Chamberlain?
Yeah, Madam Chair, there is one gentleman I ran into that wanted to say something to it. Nothing bad, he assured me.
No, absolutely not. Madam Chair, my name is Kirk Schneidwin, and we certainly do support local control and local decision-making. You know that very well and very clear. And I think, just this week, as busy as it has been, I briefly talked to Senator Chamberlain about this, and we've had a conversation and guaranteed to talk a little bit more about this. But I think you've nailed the point that it does give boards the decision. But I think, secondly, it also gives the public, 15% of the registered voters in the district, an opportunity to vote on this to move to an education board as well. And so the question that comes to my mind is, so we have – now we've converted to an education board – will those be the same school board members? I would assume they would be, but now all of a sudden you are dictating by statute how the district should be managed and distribute the revenue, where this basically is a management style that's very similar to the John Carver model, that's a policy governance model that sets the policy, sets the parameters, and then the board receives all the data coming in. And that is a superintendent board management style that some school districts use. Some have tried it, some have gotten out of it, some of them don't like it. And so I think that's something that we're putting in statute that now presently boards could do if they wanted to. Now there's provisions in here that would strip away some of the additional requirements within statute that boards have to follow. One of the other things is that raises some concern for us is that 15% of the registered voters may be too low. And we have examples around the state where some parents could come in and overturn the board or determine the management style that the board is going to follow. The The piece talks about would be done during the general election, and that's I understand that piece. But that piece too, again, would be an additional cost for districts in sharing the burden and responsibility of holding that election. And I think the clarity of while school districts now have to be very clear and have open meetings, we'll share publicly about referendums coming up. This bill doesn't require that, and so this bill just basically says that school districts are central office and education boards oversees agreements. And there's no requirement for a public hearing. So it very well could be that the public comes in and says, hey, we're electing new school board members, when in fact they're not electing new school board members. And so I think the perception and the clarity of that needs to be discussed as you move forward on this issue. And so I think it's important that people, the public, know what they're voting on. And so I would maintain that school boards have elections now, and they have the public has an opportunity to vote on those members to perform the duty and oversee the sites and functions of the districts and make sure student achievement is one of those issues. And so that is a piece to consider. In line 3.12, the one question I have, and it might be just a local control issue, is how do we hold sites accountable? So now all of a sudden, 95% of the revenue goes to school sites, as I understand the bill, and 5% goes to the board to control. So how are we to hold them accountable? Are we able to dismiss underperforming teachers, underperforming principals? Do we need to follow the PELRA statutes or 122A40 that talks about dismissal procedures? So those are things that accountability may be in the local plan, but I think that's something that needs to be fleshed out a little bit as well. And I think what we see is we see good school boards and good administrators do this. I mean, we have superintendents who understand that their role and responsibility is to manage the building principals and to drive performance goals for their principals, who in turn spin that or apply that to local school districts. And so I think the issue for us is that this piece is putting in law. This gives basically allows 15% of the public to say we're going to move in the direction of a charter or an ALC, where we believe that boards could do that now if they wanted to. There's probably some provisions in here that I'm overlooking, but I think that's something that needs to be considered as you move forward. And I think that school boards manage by looking at student achievement. I mean, that's their ultimate goal, and their policy and direction is about student achievement. And I think that this piece, that's something in common we have with this bill, is that that's one of the goals that we're looking at. But I think those questions that I raise in terms of the election, the oversight, the control of the board, the management at the local district or the local school site need to be fleshed out for us, because I think that when it comes to us, if we have 15% of the public do this, all of a sudden we look at this and it changes the management style of the school board, which we would prefer to have in our hands. So, Madam Chair, I will conclude there and stand for any questions.
Senator Chamberlain.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do appreciate his concerns. There's always concerns. Should be. We can certainly discuss the 15%. I mentioned to him earlier that we can talk about that number, 15%, and maybe move it around, get some clarifying language as far as what it would be for, and give notice and have a hearing. But the accountability and those other issues, that once the school board decided to go to education boards and change the management style and release the schools of the current burdens and get to the charter school methodology of running their schools, at least as far as exemption from statutes. The agreements between the education board and the schools would govern what they're looking for. And, again, I trust professionals. These are principals and highly educated people to get together and craft those agreements that will do just what they want to get the outcomes they want. But I do respect his position, but what he's advocating is what we got. What you're advocating is what we already have. What this is advocating is breaking away from that, and we're not mandating it. We are allowing the schools to give this a look. Let the professionals look at this and give it a shot if they'd like. They don't have to if they don't want to. The school, the parents in the district could ask for them to do the same thing. And we're empowering the professionals and the parents and the principals at the local level. But it changes the whole model. But what he's advocating is not changing and not doing this bill, frankly. So we'll work on the voting part, but I think the other part is
I think that it is – change is difficult because we tend to think in the terms of how it is now. And there's several things that you said, you know, that there's no public hearing. Well, I would – wouldn't you find it rather difficult for a board to consider taking action to do this without it being a part of a public meeting or wanting to engage their district if they were going to try to do this? I mean, doing that would, I think, probably negate the possibility of a referendum having to be held by just by virtue of that kind of communication. And if you've got a healthy board that and superintendent that are looking for some innovation are willing to do that. And we have some that would probably prefer not to change and might not function very well on that. But we have others that are chomping at the bit to be able to do this. And this kind of gives some license for that, some of those kind of opportunities. I don't think it's going to happen overnight. And by the way, this bill would need to go to the, I think, the local government elections committee because of those election provisions. So there's an opportunity to sure. To make some of those adjustments if that you feel might be needed. But I do think that this is an idea whose time has come, and it will be interesting to see if there's the interest is generated to actually pursue it. And it'll take some spark plugs, whether it's coming out of the teaching. To the teachers group or where it might come from to initiate and pull a package and an application, you know, together and, you know, lead to making this kind of a decision. So it's not, you know, none of the things that we're talking about are necessarily silver bullets, but I think there are some options that we need to be considering in this day if we're going to continue to function effectively as a public school system. Thank you very much, Mr. Denver.
Thank you.
Madam Chair?
Senator Stump.
Just a question on, you know, I think there is a process for the board to create this on a resolution, based on a resolution that's passed. But it doesn't talk about whether you can, on a board's resolution, that they could back out. And I think clarity in, you know, being able to spell out the clarity would be a whole lot more helpful, you know, so that they, because you're actually talking about different, you know, like part of the responsibility, but I think the more we could spell out, the better.
Madam Chair, members, excuse me, Sam Walseth with the Minnesota Rural Education Association, and like a lot of what the bill is asking for, deregulation. If I could bring a group of superintendents in here, and I think, Madam Chair, you've heard from for years now, they've been asking for this. To Senator Stump's point, just on that, before I talk about a couple other things, I think that was one of the dilemmas with the new schools legislation that went into effect a couple of years ago and why I don't think anybody's taken advantage of that. There was a provision, if I recall, in that statute that said basically once a board has kind of punted and created that separate site-based school, they could never get it back. And I think that was a deterrent to a lot of boards, in particular the Staples area, where that Barb Schmitz, who was on my board at one time, had really been passionate about that proposal. I think that became a deterrent where once you've kind of lost the school or, you know, kind of set it up on its own, you can never get it back if you ever want to have some oversight. So it really does get to that question of who is ultimately in charge and has the accountability. So I think you need to look at what Senator Stump just brought up because I think that was had an impact on that previous legislation. Madam Chair, members, just anytime I see 15% threshold, get a little nervous. This committee dealt with that issue on a reverse referendum a number of years ago. And actually this committee just made a choice just to say, you know, we're done with that. Yeah, and that was repealed, which some people aren't exactly thrilled with that result either, but it is what it is. In a small community, it does not take much to get 15%. And we do have districts that have battled for years to get their operating referendum through. And once you you finally get it through, you do still have a a chunk of the population who's not happy, and a 15% threshold. I just worry that this could be used as, okay, we're going to get back, we're going to put this on the ballot as a way to get at those board members and restructure. I know that's not what Senator Chamberlain is trying to get at here. I guess just overall, I mean, we're not necessarily opposed to the bill, but do have a little. When you're talking about deconstructing large bureaucratic systems, I understand that conversation, but it's a little less relevant for the districts I represent. I represent districts where the superintendent is sitting right next to the lunchroom, right next to the office. They're there. We don't have the separate admin buildings necessarily when you're talking schools of 500 kids. So I would say if we would just ask for general deregulation. I wish Senator Hahn was here because I want the global waiver bill for all the education statutes. Yes, we don't want – this is that's just too much to read. We need some deregulation. I think if you want to go that route, let's not be afraid of it and not necessarily ask that we have to go through a big process. This is something a little heavy for, I think, smaller districts to deal with, and I think just some general waivers on some statutes would be great.
Well, Mr. Walters, we've been trying, and had some successes, and there's a way to go. Change is – not easy.
It is not easy, Madam Chair. So I just wanted to, in particular, just on the 15% threshold, I think, is our main point today. So.
That is a point then for considering at the local government and elections stage deal with.
Madam Chair,
Senator Stump.
One other thought is that on the 5%, I think there, we were – I think the Governor Plenty had a proposal to put, 70% of the revenues into a classroom.
Yep.
And so we had a good discussion back then about, what kind of percentages should we have. And 95 is quite high, and it really narrows the flexibility, I think, of the school board.
I think it doesn't hurt to talk about that, and I don't know if we've got a basis for a specific percentage, but some areas, how is transportation handled? If that's a part of, or is that if you allocate the 95% and that building recognizes their needs, they can turn around and I believe this allows to contract back with the central organization to do it. So, but at a minimum of 5% for at least keeping that central structure. Now, whether we need to be, sure that some of these other areas, what are the things that are in the jurisdiction other than the instructional point that are at the site? Those are things that either need to be ironed out in their proposal. I don't know that we should try to. I hate to walk down the path of being too prescriptive because there we go again, and we don't. We're not the ones that are day to day at the firing lines with identifying those needs. So I think we should be cautious how prescriptive. But maybe we need to, if we need some more wording, for people to address and deal with, that certainly is a possibility. But I think that people have worked hard on this, and I think have done a very good job of putting it together. Senator Bono?
Yeah, Madam Chair, just on that same subject, I do have this hypothesis that there is tremendous amount of savings to be garnered if we could allow school districts regionally to truly do back office functions together. And I know we do some of it with our co-ops, and there's more and more, and I've tried different provisions. Well, this session, Senator Daley's got a bill that's actually doing a benchmarking study of all the back office functions of state agencies to be able to see where our costs fall in line, where best practices are, where there's the greatest gain for opportunity. And as a kind of a bone to me, he actually put school districts in that bill to do a benchmarking study. And I was so excited, only to find out last Friday when we met, he took it out. And the reason he took it out is because he was told it's so much more complicated to benchmark all the various school districts in terms of figuring out how much we're actually paying to have each district do all these functions. But there has to be a way, even if you don't have to do all the districts, if you could, you know, and I'm working on it, but I don't yet, and I know timing is getting to the end. First deadline's coming, but there has to be a way, and maybe it could even be an amendment to Senator Daley's bill, to do a few, sampling, geographic, diverse samplings to understand our cost structure of maintaining so much, you know, overhead. And it,
mm-hmm. And I think the other reality is, if we put the structure out, you know, as I said, this is not going to be there are not going to be people jumping in overnight and creating these boards. It's going to take a while to do that, and we've got to leave something for the next legislature
right.
to do.
Thanks.
Madam Chair.
Senator Chamberlain.
Valid points. I have no doubt they're, talk about complicated. There's got to be models in the private sector of what typically should you spend on administration and that sort of stuff. And I think we can find that fairly quickly, and I'll talk to the author here quick. This is a safeguard. It's a one thing he says is that 5% is a safeguard to ensure that it's truly decentralized.
Mm-hmm.
If you put 5% and say 5% is what you can keep for the central office, then mm-hmm. the central office can't start doing that. But I think we can have some sort of model. Maybe 5 isn't enough, but as Senator Olson alluded to, it's tough to say, you know, what that number should be. But I think we can talk to a few folks and see if we can change something in there and get it to a number that's agreeable.
The 5% may be okay if you look at the notion that there are maybe some other services that building may choose to have something done separate, and that would be negotiated between them and the central office to carry out some additional function,
right.
That some of that money would come back.
Right.
But the decision-making, those kinds of decisions would rest with the professionals in that building that are focusing on the getting the results with kids, and that's I'm not uncomfortable with that approach. As soon as people figure out that there may not be that much, the 5%, I'm not sure just what all it covers, but if it's that wasn't just out of thin air. I think there was some basis for choosing that number, but there are some other functions that the building may not want to have to bother with and would rather let the district manage it.
Madam Chair, I think that's correct also, that these agreements between the site-governed schools and the education board could do that as well.
Mm-hmm. So, any further discussion? If not, Senator Chamberlain renews his motion that Did we adopt the amendment?
Not yet.
Okay. Sorry about that. That was an author's amendment, so all in favor of the A1 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Senator Chamberlain renews his motion that Senate File 1094, as amended, be recommended to pass and re-referred to is it Local Government and Elections Committee. Any further discussion on that? If not, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Chamberlain.
Thank you.
And I don't believe we will be having the meeting on Thursday from 3 to, I think, essentially 3 to 4. I've got an hour. And we'll be, I think we'll be bringing back up the post-secondary enrollment options bill that dealing with career tech education, and see if we can reach a conclusion on that.
Thank
the meeting
you.
Is adjourned. And we'll be in one, room 112 that day. Meeting is adjourned.
Senator Harrington?
Yep.
I have something for you.
Okay.
How about that?
Again.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yep.
I was just wondering, she said we're meeting on Thursday now. That was a 3 o'clock meeting, or what time?